Pacific Beer Chat records on the traditional unceded territory of the Coast Salish First Nations, including the Tsleil-Waututh, the Keetse, the Kwantlen, the Kwikwetlem, the Matsqui, the Musqueam, the Kakite, the Semiahu, the Squamish, the Tsawwassen, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Stalo First Nations.
Welcome to Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Mike.
I'm Warren.
I'm Jordan.
And our guest today, could you introduce yourself, please?
I am Matthew from Tin Whistle Brewery. I'm the head brewer there right now.
Sweet. And I'm Alexis, co-owner of Tin Whistle Brewing Company since October 2020.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us. This is great. It's always nice when a brewery is purchased by new owners and you get to know the new people behind it and the new brewers and kind of get to know what's going on, especially when it's out of town for us.
Yeah.
So I guess and just for me, go ahead, Warren.
I was gonna say, for me, not only are they new owners, but they're in a new location from the last time I was there too. It's been a while since I've been up that way.
Absolutely. Well, just for the people that don't know, where is the brewery located?
For sure. Tin Whistle Brewing is, we're in Penticton, BC. We started out on Highway 97 in an old train museum. So we're called the Tin Whistle. We're named after a train. So it was a really fitting setting for us. But now we moved down the road. We're in the Cannery Trade Center, which is a historic building here in Penticton that used to be where they canned fruit for the region. So we've been here for almost 7 years, brewing beer. We're brewing peach beer here, and they used to can peaches here. So it seems kind of full circle that we're here and happy to be here.
Perfect. Yeah, it's also the old Cannery Brewing location as well. So it's got some history in beer for sure there.
Totally.
So go ahead, Warren.
I was just going to say, it's easy to find. I know where the cannery place was.
See, there you go.
Yes.
There's a little cafe in the front, I think, if I remember correctly.
It's now an Asian buffet, go figure.
Okay.
They make amazing pad thai. They've got awesome chicken wings and stuff. So it's a good family business, and we send people there, and they send people here, and it's awesome. So
perfect.
Team.
Gotta love that. Well, you did just take over the brewery, but when did the brewery open?
Yeah, it's been open since 1995. So we purchased it not from the original owner. The original owners owned it for a couple of years. And then Lorraine Nagy took over. She owned it for 22 years and was ready to retire. So we jumped in, like I said, in October 2020, ready to kind of take the brewery and kind of steward it to the next kind of stage of its life.
Yeah, I knew her son pretty well there, Michael. So I had a bit of a connection to the brewery through that, and was kind of a surprise when he called me one day and said, "Surprise, guess what?" So I knew before most people did, just because he gave me the inside scoop.
Sweet.
October 2020. So yeah, perfect time to be starting off in a new business. With the worldwide pandemic hitting, my God.
Yeah, you know it. I mean, this business for us is a pandemic kind of pivot, because both my husband and I lost our jobs during the pandemic. I mean, I used to work for the Vancouver Aquarium who shut during the pandemic. They couldn't make it work. My husband lost his work at the beginning of the pandemic, and we'd always wanted to be brewery owners. So, you know, we had, you know, kind of 8 years ago or so kind of plans to open a microbrewery. We had kids, so we thought we'll be responsible. We'll take the desk jobs and take a salary. And then kind of fast forward 8 years, here we are, you know, kind of doing the irresponsible thing, buying a business, and we've got three kids now. So here we are. We packed up and left Vancouver and took over Tin Whistle. So we've only known this business in the middle of the pandemic, and this business was kind of, for us, was born out of a pandemic situation. So kind of a cool and interesting time.
Oh yeah.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. So when did you come on board, Matt?
I've been with the Tin Whistle since 2009. So I've been working there for about 12 years now. Became brewer 5 years ago.
Okay, nice.
So yeah, I worked many years under the previous brewer, Jeff. And then he went on to other things. And then I kind of filled in the head brewer role there and been brewing ever since.
Nice.
Awesome.
It's always nice when you've got some continuity when you're changing ownership and everything too, because it's a big change.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Well, should we get into our first beer, guys, while we're chatting away here?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Matt, why don't you tell us what we're cracking here and a little bit about it?
Yeah, this is the Morning Glory. It's a hazy pale ale. So in this one, we use Azaka and Big Secret hops. I thought it would go really nice with the pink guava that we use. So we add hundreds of pounds of pink guava kind of right near the tail end of fermentation. And yeah, so it's a really easy kind of crushable beer. I made it or designed this beer about 3 years ago. I was seeing a lot of, you know, hazy IPAs, a lot of high ABV kind of beers, but not a whole lot of something a little more sessionable to get you through the day. So, yeah, so I just came up with something that was hazy, but still kind of easy to drink. Super fruity, so.
Yeah, it's definitely fruity. I've actually had this before. You guys were gracious enough to send me down some with all the cool new labels and stuff.
Oh, nice.
And I really enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah, it looks great. It definitely has that like really murky look. It's got a nice fluffy head that's kind of sticking around. Got some lacing on my glass, which is always nice.
Yeah, trying to find the right yeast for it was kind of the hard part. I was trying to find something that could sustain a haze and kind of last in the can, even if it did sit for a few weeks. Because I've had in the past try to design a beer to be hazy, and it keeps wanting to drop right on me. So this one we've kind of hit it out of the park. I feel like the haze kind of locked in, stays real hazy.
You got that right. It's definitely hazy.
Yeah.
And it's got a really, really nice nose. It's not a big, like, punchy in the face nose, but it's got that really nice guava. It's fruity.
Yeah.
Mild sweetness.
Little sweet citrus.
Kind of smooth and tame. Something that's, like I said, something's kind of sessionable.
It is definitely that. I've had like two or three sips already. And I could crush this thing. No problem, man. It could go really quickly. We might have to tell me to stop drinking and keep talking.
Yeah, they can go quick. I put it on tap at my house a few weeks ago. And yeah, you could forget how many glasses you've had after a while. Cause
You're just having fruit juice, man. Just fruit juice.
Almost tastes like that.
5.8%. You're going to feel them after a bit.
And, you know, I'm not really tasting that at all. Like, you taste the guava for sure, but it tastes a little bit of grain. It's super, super easy to sip. You're not going to get any kind of palate fatigue on this. It's not super bitter. It's not super sweet.
Yeah, no, it's not like punching you in the face with hops or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's balanced.
Yeah, I want to keep the malt bill for this pretty clean, just to let the guava kind of shine through on it.
Yeah, it does finish with a bitterness, though. It's nice. Interesting label.
I was just going to bring that up. So, and these are all new labels. It's a new thing you guys have been doing, right?
Yeah, we did a full rebrand when we came in. A lot of the labels had been designed quite a number of years ago, and so we thought to kind of put our spin on things and kind of give the brand a bit of a refresh, we needed to kind of go big. So full website rebrand, can label rebrand, social media, the space, the whole thing kind of aligns on purpose. But yeah, the work is actually done by my cousin out of Ontario. She just left an agency and went to work on her own. But she's never done beer labels before, so we knew we'd get something kind of different from her. And as you all know, it's a very competitive marketplace. So to have something a little bit different is important to kind of stand out on the shelf. So they're fun. They're fun. Yeah. They reflect the place. I mean, that's the channel float in Penticton that you see on the label.
Okay. That's somebody in an inner tube going down the river.
Yeah.
It's a little guava, no?
It is. It is. Yeah. So all the labels have some connection to Penticton, to the place, on purpose.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Cool. I love floating that river.
I've never actually floated it, but yeah I love the look of these cans. I like the colors.
They're definitely eye-catching.
Yeah.
They get your attention. They pop out of the shelf for sure. They are a bit different.
I mean, I like them. You knew what a Tin Whistle beer looked like on the shelf back in the day, but these are really striking. Like, you're going to reach for this and go, what is this?
Yep.
Which is what you want.
And you notice the cans too, right? I mean, his Tin Whistle historically has always been in 650 mil bomber bottles. Yeah. So we bought 90,000 cans when we came in and worked on transitioning over to cans, which is, you know, quite a job to do. to transition. So, but it made the brand more relevant again. And with people drinking in parks and on patios and, you know, having picnics and stuff during COVID, it's the perfect, it was the perfect time.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that everyone went bottles and then the market just went, well, we don't want bottles anymore at all.
Yeah.
But it's nice to be able to pivot.
Well, it's nice too that they're smaller, so you can have one or two and then switch up to another beer. I mean, I used to get bombers all the time, and it's like you have two bombers and you're done. It's like your two beers of the night.
Yeah.
At least with the cans, you can have three, four, depending on what you're drinking, how much your tolerance is, I guess. Maybe six for me.
Are you going mobile canning then, or did you guys bring in a canning line?
Yeah, we're going mobile canning. Just we didn't want to invest in the infrastructure just yet. We wanted to kind of reserve some capital. As you know, canning lines are expensive. So we're working with OK Canning out of Kelowna. You know, he pulls up his equipment kind of every other week for us and empties a couple tanks, you know, three, four tanks, depending on the week. And we just take everything off the line and then Matt just gets brewing again. So just trying to keep up. You know, with the summer demand and stuff like that. So yeah, it's worked out really well. We have a good relationship with them. They come to the table and let us do what we need to do. So
that's awesome. I guess for Matt, what's the size of the brew house?
It's a 20 hack brew house.
20. Oh, wow. It's pretty big.
That's it. It's pretty big. Yeah. And then what are you working on tanks? Like how many tanks you have? What size are they?
We have the 4 20 hack fermenters and 6 20 hack bright tanks.
So no we're, doubles?
Pardon me?
No doubles?
No, not yet. In the future, hopefully.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, we're turning them around pretty quick now. We've changed some things up. So we're turning fermenters over in about 5 days for some batches now. So,
yeah.
What are you using? You using Kvake?
And our brew house was designed by Frank Appleton, which Matt talks a little bit about, which is kind of cool because he was the, you know, kind of the originator. So we're kind of lucky to have a piece of history there, too.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I read something today, I believe today, which if you're listening to the podcast is last week. today was, I believe the rumored day that, hang on, I got it here somewhere. As legend has it, on this day in 1982, the first craft beer since Prohibition, was placed on the bar at the Troller Pub in Horseshoe Bay.
Oh, between Frank and Appleton Mitchell. And John Mitchell. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
I did was John read that. Mitchell's first place.
That's cool.
Yeah. All the tanks at the brewery have Frank Appleton's kind of name stamped in them. He designed the brew house. It was made by Ripley Stainless in the mid.
Okay.
Damn.
So they used Frank as a consultant, I imagine, for designing the brew house. And still making beer to this day. We've had to adapt a few things to keep oxygen out of the process and whatnot. I mean, tanks have evolved over the times, but we're still making it all come together and work.
Right on.
That's awesome. Ripley's
good stuff too. Nice and local.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they're great.
I just wanted to ask there. Yeah, you said you're turning over some beers really fast. Or is it all because of Kvake yeast? Or
yeah, we utilize that and I use a yeast blend in the IPA that seems to work out pretty good. So
damn,
just kind of dipping our toes into blending 2 or 3 strains together to kind of create what we want.
Did you use the Kvake yeast in this Morning Glory? Because I'm almost feeling like I didn't say anything, but I found like there was a yeast taste in with the guava, which I'm really liking. It's working well.
No, not in this one actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is your blend, right, Matt?
Yeah, this is the blend of I think 3 yeasts I'm using in this one.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Interesting idea. We don't hear a lot of that happening. Usually, sticking with a single strain or using a mixed fermentation with things other than yeast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a viable thing. You can definitely blend yeasts on the first gen. I mean, when you go to repitch, if you were to do it, that's when things will kind of go downhill on you. But on that first initial generation, you can definitely mix yeast successfully depending on what you want from.
Interesting.
Because, usually you'll hear about they'll use one yeast to ferment and then like a different one to bottle condition or something.
Yeah, totally.
Huh.
Yeah, that's definitely a standard thing you can do. But yeah, yeast blending now is kind of a fun way to get the characteristics you want out of your beer. And with that, we've been able to turn around our hoppy beers, this one included, and the IPA in a pretty short time, pretty quick fermentation.
Cool.
And using just signs in general, we found ways to reduce things like diastole and other things. So we're able to produce beer without any flare and flaws or anything like that to kind of keep up with summer demand, since we don't have 40 heck for tanks right now to double batch into. So we're relying on just 420 hectoliter fermenters to keep us going.
Wow. Well, it seems like you're doing a good job, my man.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. So I've actually, like you're talking about the yeast and how fast you're getting them out, I've tried about six of the beers since the takeover, and all of them were clean, crisp, like depending what they were, some hoppy. I forget which the Hopfenweizen.
Yeah, the coconut.
Fantastic. Fantastic, man. Like yeah. I really tried to find another four pack of it down here and I just couldn't succeed.
We're working on it. Cocoa galore, coconut hop and vice. Yeah, not a lot of people are doing hop and vice.
No, and I actually brought it up on a previous podcast and I couldn't remember who it was. I had to like go into my Instagram and be like, oh shit, it's Tin Whistle. I should have known this. The fucking can art alone, right?
Definitely a popular summer one. I mean, it's kind of taken off, that beer, when we created it originally 3 or 4 years ago. It's evolved over the times though now, so I'm kind of happy with where it's at now. So I can't really change it much from where it is right now.
I'd just say, man, it's perfect the way it is. You get the coconut, you get like a little hop, but you have that hefty like banana, like clover kind of thing going on still too. It's well done, bro.
Thank you. Yeah, I kind of took inspiration from a pina colada and I kind of wanted to create a beer similar to it. And that was back when you weren't really seeing a lot of light coconut beers. We've seen a lot more of them now, but
pina colada beers are flying right now. I see them everywhere, it seems.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I've seen a lot of coconut, and even guava's picked up in the last year or so.
Yeah, guava's huge too. It's one of my favorites, actually.
That's a good fruit.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Even
better
in beer.
Flavored IPAs.
Better in beer. That's all I'm saying.
I guess, what's the lineup like these days? Is there a core lineup of beers?
Do you want me to? So we kind of looked at the lineup when we came in. And so we've got kind of four core beers that are some of the original Tin Whistle recipes that Matt's adapted over time and even more so in the last short little bit. So, you know, the brewery started 26 years ago with Coyote Blonde, the Black Widow Dark English Ale, and a honey porter called Killer Bee. So we still have those in the lineup. Peach Cream Ale followed shortly thereafter. So those are kind of the four core beers. We really want to reflect on the history of the brewery because, you know, we've been around a long time and we want people to know that, you know, and these aren't recipes that have kind of come and gone. They're recipes that have stayed true and that Matt has kind of taken ownership over and tweaked over, you know, even over the last few months, we've been tweaking those recipes a bit, but those are the core for us. And that's kind of the history of the brewery. But then, you know, we kind of rotate through every season. You know, this season we've got another like 3-4 beers we're rotating in, and then those will kind of come off and we'll rotate some other things in the fall. So we will never have 30 beers a year. You know, we're trying to keep it really simple and we're trying to do beers really thoughtfully. So we're really thoughtful about what ingredients are going into the production process. You know, we're carbon neutral now, we're looking at organic production, you know, we're trying to do things really thoughtfully. So we'll never have a lineup of 30 beers, but we'll have a lineup of 7 or 8 beers and we'll do them really damn well.
Awesome.
Can you talk a little bit more about the idea to go like carbon neutral and everything? Cause there's not a lot of breweries that are doing that.
Yeah. I mean, that's my background. I have a master's in green business. So I've been doing that for, you know, the last 10 or 15 years and did that just recently at the Vancouver Aquarium. I led all of their environmental and sustainability work. And so we knew when my husband and I took over, we knew we wanted to bring that to the table. That's our values, but it's also how we thought we could bring a little bit of leadership and maybe do things a little bit differently. Beer, like all other products, obviously has an impact, right? I mean, we're shipping grain, we're bringing in hops, we're growing stuff, we're delivering things, we're using energy and lots of water and all these things, right? There's a lot of impact there. So we thought, you know what, we'll come in, we'll do a full assessment of all the impacts. So we know where the impacts are, and then we'll just kind of target them and start to kind of drive change where we can. And carbon neutral was, you know, first we measured our carbon footprint. So, you know, we looked at all of the energy consumption and natural gas consumption and kind of across the brewery and measured that. And, you know, we got a new compressor and new lighting and started to drive reduction. And then we offset the remaining portion of our footprint with carbon credits from the Great Bear Rainforest in BC. So we'll continue to drive that work. It's important work to fight climate change and to show that, you know, breweries can be a part of something bigger and a part of something that's important in the world today. So we'll keep driving, you know, zero waste. We're working on organic. So we're pushing lots of kind of angles on it. But I think it's important work to do.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, when Metro Vancouver can hit 40 plus degrees during a heat dome, you know,
there's something going
on because that's unprecedented. It sucked. Never want to see it again.
I can only imagine how hot it was in Penticton. We had it probably lighter than you guys did.
Oh God. It's brutal. I mean, we're from Vancouver. We didn't have air conditioning in our house in Vancouver, but thank God we have it here.
I have it only in the bedroom. It was awful.
Nice job.
I wouldn't leave the bedroom at that point.
I work outdoors, so yeah, I didn't have a choice. But what can you do, right?
Well, since we're talking about the brewery a little bit, why don't we talk about front of house? So it sounds like you guys have at least 8 taps on at all times. Do you have like more than that, like guest taps or anything? And what's seating like?
Only because of we have a tap room license here. So we're working on moving towards a lounge license, which will allow us to serve other people's beers and do guest taps and ciders and wine and all these things. But right now we just have a tap room license. So legally, we're only allowed to serve our own product. So we just have our own beers on tap. We've got 8 beers on tap right now. We do flights, we do glasses. People come and hang out with us and just chill. And we're really trying to create a community here. So as you guys know, beer brings people together. So we got a ton of people coming and hanging out with us. And, you know, we don't do food, we just do beer. We can do beer really well. Food, we can't do, we don't know food. So we don't have a kitchen or anything. So, but we've got some great eateries in our building here in the Cannery Trade Center. And so we just tell people to bring their own food, come hang out with us, drink some great beer. And we just stay laser focused.
Awesome. Well, what's capacity there? Do you like, and like patio wise, inside wise, how many people can you seat?
Yeah, the load currently is 58. So we can have 58 people between the patio and tap room, which I'm sitting in now. Which works. I mean, we're rotating people through pretty quickly, because people don't come and, you know, have a large meal and sit and hang out. They're like coming for beer. They're taking stuff to go. They're heading out to the beach. So 58's worked out for us so far. We will expand that as we get the new licensing in play. So stay tuned.
And as restrictions loosen up and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Life is slowly getting back to some normalcy. So yeah, you're seeing some expansions of, you know, capacities and everything.
Yeah. Hallelujah for that.
No doubt.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Did you guys build a patio space during the pandemic?
We did. We have a beautiful parking lot patio.
Nice.
We weren't sure how we were going to serve this parking lot patio, because our tap room's actually we lease a few spaces. So our tap rooms our taps are a bit in. So instead we had a decommissioned loading bay. We rolled up the loading bay door, pulled up this like mobile Perlick system. We have this tap system. We have pulled it up to the door and just started serving people off the loading
bay. So, awesome. Wow.
COVID pivots happen. You know, we put a bunch of seats out there. We're serving people off the loading bay, and it's all part of this building is an industrial building. You know, it's not polished. It's got a lot of character and a lot of history to it. So that kind of works.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hopefully
some ingenuity.
We didn't. I mean, when you don't have a choice, you come up with something.
Yeah,
it works. So that's us making it work.
Well, that's awesome. You know, hopefully, with a lot of places have been given these temporary patios, and a lot of people are going to fight really hard if they have to let them go. So hopefully, that can stay and maybe become a little more permanent too.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, no, I've read somewhere that you can apply now to keep your patio.
Yeah, extended it till October of next year, I think. So originally it was supposed to, these extended service areas were supposed to end at the end of October 2020. Yeah. Now they've extended them another bit to get people the time to apply for them formally. So yeah, we've celebrated that. That's a real win for us.
Nice.
It's a real
win for everybody.
For everyone, yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a building like yours that is kind of shoehorned in for sure, right?
Yeah. Totally. And, you know, it takes a long time to get building permits and stuff to do, you know, we want to do a deck and more formal patio kind of outside, but all that stuff takes time. So now we've got some time, which is good. So we'll take it.
Well, maybe you can just build some stairs down that loading dock or something when it's official.
You never know, you guys.
I can come up with ideas.
A slide, a bouncy castle. I don't know. There could be some really cool ways to work on this, but
I'm in. I'll be right there. I've never been in one of those things. They look fun.
They are, Mike. They are.
Oh, I bet. Well, do we want to get into the second beer here?
I was just going to hold the can up and be like, hello.
Scooped.
Dude, I still got a mouthful here.
Grab my can.
Thank you to our sponsor, Ross Vanderhoek, with Roy LePage Wollstonecraft Real Estate. Check out www.rossvanderhoek.com for all your residential, commercial, new development, and investment property needs.
I got mine early, just the case. But so we're going to start off the Queen of Tart Prickly Pear Sour, coming in at 5.3 and 10 IBUs.
Prickly pear?
The prickly pear. Different. So, Alexis, is this you guys' first sour you guys have ever done?
It is. This is my fourth child.
Okay. Because I know there's a little backstory because I was reading about it earlier. Something to do with where you guys live and how it's kind of deserty. Do you want to elaborate more than my dumbass?
It is a fundraiser beer for the Osoyoos Desert Center, who is a really cool nonprofit here, who's working to conserve and restore the native antelope brush ecosystem, which is where we live. But it's also one of the rarest in Canada. There's not a lot of tracks of it left, unfortunately. So a lot of it's is gone forever, but what remains is being restored and conserved. And so this beer is a fundraiser for that, the Osoyoos Desert Center, who's working to do this work. So prickly pears grow there natively. So we thought it was a cool fit. So that's the story.
So these are local prickly pears in here?
They aren't. Unfortunately, there's nobody commercially farming prickly pears here. So this prickly pear comes from Mexico.
Okay.
But kind of a funny story with it. Matt and Tim and I, my husband and Matt, were standing around the door. We got this big barrel in from Mexico, this giant barrel. It said red tuna on it when it arrived. We had quite a large heart attack about that because we'd sent a lot of money to Mexico for this beer and had to do a lot of explaining at the bank, by the way, to wire transfer money to Mexico for this. So we get this giant drum in and we're like, oh shit, it says red tuna on it. And we're like, now we got duped. So now we're making a tuna beer, I guess. But luckily our summer intern did some researching on Google, and apparently red tuna is the interpretation in Spanish. There's an interpretation around being prickly pear. So it ended up being okay in the end, but we had a few moments at first. So we've been calling this beer the red tuna.
I love that. That's hilarious.
That's really cool that I didn't even realize that the prickly pear grew natively anywhere here. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't come from here for this. That's really cool.
It has quite the color to it.
It has a nice nose to it too, man. You're a little behind.
It's like pinkish or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Matt almost looks like an hibiscus beer or something like that.
Matt came up with this concept for prickly pear.
Wow.
We haven't really seen it done much. It's been done a little bit in the US, but not really in Canada so much.
Yeah. I've not seen anything really in the past 5 years that I can remember off the top of my head anyways.
I definitely drank some prickly pear beer when I was in Phoenix, but other than that, I don't think I really had any.
Yeah.
Of course in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is really interesting.
I really like the nose. Like, obviously, it must be prickly pear. I couldn't tell you that that's what a prickly pear smells like, but it's got a really nice fruity nose.
It's like something I couldn't put my finger on, but it smells really nice. It's like fruity.
It's like a fruity, floral kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly how I describe it. Why don't you tell us a bit about it, Matt?
Yeah, with this beer, when we decided to do a sour finally, I wanted to kind of come up with a unique idea, because you see a lot of sours that use just conventional fruit or berries. So I wanted to use something that was kind of sums up the natural plants you'd find here in the valley. So I came up with prickly pear, which kind of has this really nice on its own kind of berry like kind of fruity. I get a little bit of citrus from it,
almost so a raspberry.
Yeah,
it's kind of like an ever changing flavor. I've had a lot of people who have tried to talked about it, and everyone just kind of says a different, describes it with a different fruit, basically. It's a hard one to pin down, but with this one, I tried to keep it really clean and simple. It was our first sour, like I said, so we've never done a kettle sour on our system. I wasn't even sure if we were able to. Like I said, it's a pretty old system. We don't even have any tri-clamp ports on the kettle. So even drawing a sample off to take the pH of it, I had to rig something up and basically attach a sample port to the bottom of the valve of the kettle itself, or the whirlpool arm, just to draw a sample up. So it took a lot of engineering to make it work, to be able to flood the kettle with CO2 as we sour it and to plug the stack up. So with this one, yep. I just wanted to keep it really, really clean, simple, just to let that prickly pear come through and have all that color show. So I didn't really want it to be a hazier kind of sour. I wanted to drop a little clear, just let that brightness of that color from the prickly pear kind of shine through.
Yeah, the color's gorgeous.
I was going to say it's not hazy at all. I can see my hand through my large glass, and it's a beautiful, like, almost hibiscus is the right word to describe it. Like, it looks like that color of beer, like a pinky reddish color.
Yep.
But, yeah, man, totally. The flavors is insane. And yeah, it's just nice.
It's a little more complex than your average kettle sour.
It's just tart enough, too. It's not sour. Yeah. Like, some of those kettle sours go overboard.
Yeah, it's not burning or anything like that. It doesn't remind you of vinegar in any way.
It's puckering.
Sours are rough for me.
You know why that is, you guys? Because Matt gets heartburn, and he didn't want to give himself heartburn from his beer.
Thank you,
because we all do.
If you have something that's way too sour, it'll give you heartburn. I don't care who you are.
Well, should. We talk about Tums way too much on this podcast. They should be our sponsor. Like, for real.
Matt for the save.
Yeah,
that's perfect. I have Tums with this beer, so I didn't.
It's definitely too low. It's definitely tart, but it's not challenging in any way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and that was just in part that for me personally, I don't like it when things are the acidity is too low. Because it is kind of a challenge for your body later at times for some people. So I wanted to keep it a little more approachable and just, something that's going to treat me well, even when I'm sampling it myself.
Perfect.
Well, I'm still mind blown by just the flavors coming off this. For prickly pear, something I never really had in a beer, you do get a lot of berries coming off it. But I'm like, it's a raspberry. Is it like, it's all like those tartar berries, like field berries. Not like a blueberry, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it's like a little citrus in there too. I don't know, man. It's all over the map and I'm fucking loving it.
I find that the citrus came through from the kettle sour in itself through the lacto.
Yeah.
The blend we chose the kettle sour with kind of threw out its own kind of fruitiness, just like a natural kettle sour would. But the prickly pear itself is just this ever-evolving, shifting, fruity flavor that I really dig. I mean, I've even at times got watermelon off of it.
Oh, wow.
Kiwi at one point, I thought. So it's a hard one to pin down. When I was trying to come up with a quick description of it for coworker, it was hard. I just had to pick every fruity descriptor I could think of and write it down.
I was almost getting like cranberry and stuff in there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
I get that too, yeah.
Pretty interesting. I like that. It's different. And you know what? I dig the label on this one too. I think
I was just going to say that.
Even more than the other one.
So this kind is of a, we have a lot of deer running loose in the valley. So they're these mule deer that run all over everyone's lawn. And so it's a native species. So everything, like I said, all the labels all reflect the place that where we brew. So the deer is a local species here. So
who's the little queen looking thing here? Looks the like queen of hearts. Queen of Hearts holding the cactus.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, the Queen of Hearts looks like a bear.
Yeah, you got it.
Feeding a pie to the deers that are wrecking all the shit, eh?
Well, you got to stop them from eating the cactus flowers.
Or the garden.
No, the artwork is fantastic, though. I like just the way Queen of Tart is written on it, too. It's totally eye-grabbing, and all you really have to do is pick it up and turn, and you see your tin whistle logo right there with the description, everything.
Easy to read, not too much to look at.
Well, I think you're hitting it out of the park with the way it's labeled now. It's an easy left twist, and you see exactly that it's tin whistle, beautiful artwork on the front. And all the cans are consistent that way because, like I said, I've had a couple. The Black Widow is pretty cool artwork too. Very yeah, I like tasty. That. That's one of the core ones.
That's good looking artwork, and it definitely brings it into the modern times here.
Yeah. Those original recipes have kind of the white backing with a simple illustration on them. And then this new series, the new seasonal stuff is all lots of color and
right.
Same palette and stuff. So you can kind of see the similar color palette coming through, which you see behind me on the wall, which is on the website. So it's all consistent. So hopefully when you see them, you know it's Tin Whistle, right? And that's the goal anyway.
Yeah. So the color palette and the appearance of the labels also is subtly indicates which are the cores that have carried over from before and which
exactly. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So it's the Killer Bee, the
Black Widow.
The Black Widow, the Blonde and Cream. And Peaches and Cream.
Those are the four. Yeah, those are the four cores and the oldest beers we make. You know, the beers that have been around for a long time. So we wanted to celebrate that, and so they have their own kind of that's the kind of original kind of Tin Whistle series, and then we have the new kind of funkier stuff that Matt's been working on.
Yeah, when you say Peaches and Cream, the first thing I see in my mind is that 650 bomber with the old label.
And it's now Peach Cream Ale is what it's called. The Peaches and Cream drive us crazy because we think of corn when we think of Peaches and Cream.
I think of 112. I'm sorry. It's like a band. They have a song called Peaches and Cream.
Right? I know.
Somebody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean,
avoid any references to anything else.
Yeah. So you guys still make the Peaches Cream Ale?
Yeah. Matt's been working on that recipe. So
tweaking it?
Yeah. How many recipe changes have we done on that, Matt? Quite a few.
Four or five in the last few months now. I mean, and they're all gradual, minute tweaks just to kind of get there. We don't have a pilot system, so everything we're doing, whenever we make a new beer, we get
1,000 liters.
Yeah.
That's a pilot batch.
Yeah.
If it doesn't go right. Mm.
Yeah. Well, tweaks, right?
Yeah. Small.
So with the core lineups, we made quite a few tweaks to the original recipes. They're ever evolving. And with the peach, we've made quite a few revisions of it. Just kind of modernize it and bring it up to 21st century standards of beer. So, and we're, it's getting there. We're pretty happy with where it's at.
I bet.
I love the fact that you guys are doing that and just trying to elevate all your beers to where like the palates now are from like 10 years ago. You can't just stay in that one bubble or you're just not going to succeed. So kudos on all that.
I like core brands, and then when you find something, you can stick with it. But at the same time, I don't think the core brands need to be stagnant and stay exactly the same for 10, 15 years. Why not slowly evolve them, change them, and bring them up to date, keep them up to date?
Yeah.
You're making small changes. People won't notice.
I mean, one of the beers that everyone in BC knows is Fat Tug, and that beer is not the same beer that it was years ago. It's a completely different beer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's changed so much.
I don't really get it on tap much anymore. I mean, there's other things I go to instead.
No, I agree. But it's just like everyone knows that beer. It's been on tap in BC forever, and it is a totally different beer.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, if you sit and you don't do anything, you get kind of forgotten.
It's true. And that was kind of the thing with some of the core beers. They were getting a little tired, so we really wanted to make an effort to just – elevate and uplift all the beers. I mean, we're doing a lot of water chemistry now, or we weren't before. We've invested in a lot of lab grade instrumentation, so we can take precise measurements of mash pH and mash temperature and all that. So we're really trying to dial in, get rid of all oxygen out of the system. Since it's an older system, our fermenters aren't pressure rated, so we were transferring with a pump before while having air come in the fermenter, which is not ideal. So we've went back and forth with Ripley Stainless, and we've developed a way to build pressurize these fermenters that were never meant to, and get oxygen out of the system and kind of just elevate everything to where it should be.
Excellent.
That's awesome. Just, you know, doing what you have to make the system work even better is so cool.
Yeah, well, there's always ways to improve. There's always ways to make the efficiency better, to make the process better. And if you're working on it and, you know, examining it and making those changes, then it can only be good. It can only help you move forward, right?
I mean, if a home brewer can make a really good beer out of a plastic carboy, anything can happen.
There you go. We also have an amazing relationship with our city water department. I mean, because they're emailing that like weekly, talking about source of water because they switch sources depending on the time of year.
Oh, really?
Chemistry. So we have a really close relationship with them. So that Matt can then make sure the water chemistry is consistent throughout the year, because it changes, as you know, significantly depending on the source. So if it's channel or it's lake, depending on where the source is and what the mix is, you know, there can be a lot of changes, and we're trying to produce a consistent product at the end of the day. So those relationships have been huge for us too. And Matt's been key in that.
That's interesting, because like Metro Vancouver is a mix of three very, very large water sources that don't change all that much, and I think they're all treated exactly the same. Are you able to talk at all a little more in depth about the water changes there, Matt?
Oh, we've had a big change here lately.
Yeah, but it was a one-time change that they announced.
And it's lower mainland wide.
Yeah, much. It's the same change all across.
Here with our two water sources are the creek from a lot of the runoff in the winter and the Okanagan Lake. The problem with the lake, the water is really kind of a lot harder, a lot more minerals in there. Where your runoff, your creek water is a lot more neutral. Not a lot of minerals, didn't have time to sit in there and get them. It's a softer water too.
Yeah.
So our water treatment center blends the two. And depending on the time of year, it might be 90% lake, 10% creek. In the summer, it could be 60% creek and, you know, 40% lake. So it's always evolving and changing. So for us to keep our water profiles kind of consistent, the city of Penticton, Mike from the water treatment center there, he's been great in helping us out and sending us reports when we need to, you know, ahead of changes. So he usually gives us like a week notice when water changes are going to happen, and gives us time to reanalyze our water output.
That's awesome, because it can really, really change the flavor of a beer with the difference in water.
Well,
Alex. No. And we don't have we don't hit a button and the water chemistry corrects, you know, like we're working with equipment here. So everything Matt's doing is very much tied to the science behind everything.
Nice.
Yeah. And the water can make a big difference. I mean, like for the Morning Glory, right, I boosted the chloride level of that quite a bit, kept the sulfite down a little more. So we are trying to, every recipe now, and this is part of the kind of refresh, every recipe obviously has its own water targets we're trying to hit for the chemistry, it's really important to know the changes of the water were happening. Before, there was no water chemistry happening, so it was never I guess an issue, but we want to definitely make sure everything stays as consistent as possible, since it is the biggest ingredient that we have going into the beer.
Absolutely. And you want your cores to be similar in the winter as they are in the summer, right?
Yeah, totally.
I'm just happy to hear you're filtering out all the Pogo pee out of the lake for us.
Our carbon.
You might have just given the name of a new beer.
Well, don't call it that.
Well, they do boil it too, so.
Dude, did you try the Oga Pogo pee? It's so good.
Wow. Well, I mean, like,
water. I'll trademark that.
Yeah. Water is so important, because I know I listen to a lot of podcasts out of California too. And oh, I mean, so many breweries down there, they have to just go straight, like, direct osmosis, DO filters, strip it to nothing, and then build it back up because the water is so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. If you can do that, I guess you can keep your consistency perfect and get rid of all the bicarbonates out of your water too. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing you can't really do with the filtration we have. We're just filtering out the chlorines and all that with the carbon filter. But the nice thing about the Okanagan here, especially Penticton, is our water is quite neutral. So none of the actual chlorides or sulfates are naturally higher than what I would boost them for any style anyways.
Okay.
So we're coming in fairly neutral, you know, kind of low on everything, which gives me the
chance. Just pH you're more adjusting for?
pH, yeah, we're doing a lot of mash pH adjustments too, and obviously when we made the sour, you know, pre-acidifying and all that. So we're definitely doing using the water reports to kind of gauge where our pH will be.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, every beer we're kind of developing now is every style and every recipe has kind of a target mash pH too. So we're not just trying to target a blanket mash pH. So for some of the darker beers, I might want a slightly higher mash pH than some of the lighter beers.
Yep.
So having those water reports and really spending a lot of time looking over them, and it's kind of giving us the upper hand and creating a consistent product that will be, like you said, the same across whether you drink it in December or September or August, should taste the same.
That's perfect. Awesome.
It's a way to do it.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, having a good pH meter helps, so you can take a measurement while you're doing the mash and make an adjustment on the fly too, right?
Yeah, that's where I can thank Tim and Alexis. They really got a nice pH meter for us. We're running good. A nice bench model Hanna, so it's working really great for us.
Perfect.
And I mean, those Penstall ones are great too, but having a good one. I mean,
those little hobby ones are exactly what they are.
Yeah, they're fine, but they don't last long, and yeah, it's just it's not worth keeping buying them. So you might as well get the right one right off the bat, and just change the electrodes once in a while, and keep it
calibrated every month or two, and
we calibrate it every time we use it. On brew day, it's not uncommon for me to take pre-boil, post-boil pH of the wort, and then a mash pH. So I just calibrate it in the morning, use it throughout the day. So every day that we do use it, we will calibrate it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad. It sounds like you guys have made a bit of a shift in the last couple of years and to a little more science input.
I'd say even not last few years. It sounds like the last couple months too. Yeah. Just with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're enjoying the change is what you're saying to us then there.
Totally.
It can only help, right? It can only make the beer better.
I was just going to say, a good investment into equipment will help you in your long run too. So it's nice that Alexis and the other co-owner, sorry, loss of name there for a second, but it's awesome they're doing that for you guys.
Yeah, it's super appreciated. I mean, anything that we can use to keep the beer consistent makes just life a lot easier for everyone. I mean, for us, the customers too. I mean, nothing's worse than having a beer that you tried a year ago and it being slightly different or completely different later on. We want to drink it again.
Don't come to Pitt Meadows. They change quite constantly here.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay then.
Oh yeah, drastically. I'm like, is this the same beer? Oh you guys used funny. A weird yeast. It's not even taken right. You should have dumped this.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, just
only number 12.
I think we just killed Mike.
Oh
shit. Oh god.
Yep.
Yeah, no, but the slight adjustments are the best. Like, it's the worst coming into a place and just something you remember being so excellent. You go have it, and it's just subpar. Like, it's like I've had stuff that should have been dumped out of the tank, I feel like, because it tastes so much different that it's almost awful. Like, because you're used to that taste.
Trying to be consistent and make the same beer year-round, it's like trying to hit a moving target. Your ingredients are changing, your water's changing, the environment's changing, and you're trying to make the exact same thing happen. It's difficult.
Well, when you change a yeast and hop profile or malt profile all at once and just hope it tastes the same, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you can't change all three. I mean, for a few things, we've changed the yeast blend or the yeast, or just a single strain of yeast. But I mean, if you're using a yeast that's quite similar, you're just changing it for, say, fermentation schedule sake, but it's a similar profile. It's not really a big change, but trying to, if we're going to change the hops, the malt, and the yeast all at once, that's much a new
beer. That's a different beer.
Yeah. It's
not the same anymore. Yeah, you ain't rebrewing, you're just brewing a new one.
Yeah.
Now, my advice to any homebrewers who are listening, or even the pros for that matter, if you're going to start changing recipes and tweaking things, change one thing at a time so you know what happened.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So how far and wide... Oh, go ahead, Jordan.
No, go ahead, Mike. I'll shut up.
How far and wide can we find your beer these days?
Yeah, great question. I mean, when we came in, Tin Whistle has been distributed, you know, in the Lower Mainland. They've been in Alberta, Saskatchewan, over at points in time. Mm-hmm. When we came in, we just wanted to own the backyard first. We knew we wanted quality beer in the market. We know beer doesn't get better with age, so we wanted to just own the backyard. So we're a Soyuz to Vernon over to Kamloops now, right now, and we're keeping up with that production capacity. That won't always be the case. I mean, we're looking at distribution to the Lower Mainland. We're looking at distribution to Saskatchewan and Alberta, but we got to make sure we can keep the quality good first. So, I mean, we pulled product from Alberta when we came in. It had been sitting too long. Quality is really important, and a consistent product is important because we know, this brand is, you know, we're building it on quality. And so we got to have good stuff in the market. Those bad experiences don't work for us. So we pulled back. We're just in our backyard right now. And we'll expand over time. We're building production capacity. Matt's brewing 3 days a week right now. We're pushing that. We're pushing to brew more. We'll look and see what infrastructure we need to do more to push the barriers of just the kind of South Okanagan. So stay tuned. We just need to find the right partners and the right production kind of side to do it. So,
and I mean, if you're having trouble keeping up with your area, then just stay in your air for now, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It totally makes sense.
Yeah. And with that being said, we are in the government liquor stores. We do have two listings in the BC government liquor stores and have for a number of years. So we can be found in the Lower Mainland in bottles still, with our peach cream ale and our Killer Bee honey porter at select BC government liquor stores. They choose the liquor stores you go in. So we ship to the Delta Distribution Center and then they're distributed from there. So people can definitely order from their home government liquor store and they'll bring in, you know, a case at a time or whatever. So we are there in bottles, but we hope to transition to cans there over time. Mm-hmm. So we are on spec in a lot of liquor stores around here in cans. So we're building that kind of model with them and we'll continue to kind of push. So stay tuned.
Nice.
I feel like there's a couple private liquor stores that you guys could reach out to down here that would definitely you guys would do well in.
Yeah, on Instagram, we've been getting people reaching out to us from the Lower Mainland, from Langley, from Surrey, saying, hey, we'll take you. So stay tuned. We just have to find the right distribution partner to get there and to make sure we have quality in the market every time.
Yeah. Beauty. You know. Just pull out of Alberta and look after us. It's
we've
fine.
Pulled, we've pulled Alberta. So we're
in
Saskatchewan anymore. Not right now anyway. We just don't have the capacity to be there and to be there properly. So. Yeah. Stay tuned, you guys. It's a constant kind of conversation here to figure out how we expand the business and do it smartly.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just a little bummed because I was supposed to actually be in Penticton recently, and I was in Kelowna, had car troubles, and it completely changed my plans. So
darn it. Well, come anytime, you guys. You're welcome always.
Yeah. The plan is to definitely be up in Penticton at some point this summer. Yeah. So I'll be stopping in for sure.
Good.
I'm hoping to, too.
Me too.
Well, I think this is wrapping up right now. I think we just lost someone here. Probably had to do some daddy duty.
Nope, we're all here. Like
Matt, is he back?
Oh, yeah, he's back.
Yeah, he's back.
Oh, he did. He popped away from it. I'm on my cell phone, so I can't see. But I was just going to do my question of the podcast.
All right.
And I'll give Warren a break, and let's start off with Alexis. So we only have two beers to choose from tonight, but we normally pick your favorite beer and why.
From the Tin Whistle lineup?
Yeah, oh yeah. Just the two beers we had today. Yeah.
Well, the two we had.
I know. But I got to go the sour. Just the story of it, you know, that it's, you know, contributing to the local ecosystem here, which is awesome. It's our first sour. You know, Matt was monitoring that thing like it was our child. You know, he was taking tests all the time trying to figure out how sour we wanted it and stuff. So, I mean, for me, it's so much the story behind these beers that are so important. And the taste is there, obviously. We're working on lessening the impact and stuff too, but it's got to be sour all the way.
Nice. Well, Matt, I'm coming to you with the same question. The favorite beer out of the two we had tonight, and just give me a little reason why.
Which is your favorite child?
I mean, I don't have a favorite child. No, I have to go with the Morning Glory just because I'm kind of partial towards hoppy beers. I really like hazy beers on top of that, and guava is a great fruit. It's just a beer that really kind of meshed with me when I originally came up with the recipe for it.
And over the last few months, it's really evolved to where it is now. I'm super happy with it. And I just find it to be a really easy drinking, hazy guava beer that just goes down really good, especially when it's 40 degrees out in the Okanagan. It's the perfect beer for it, for me personally.
Yeah, I knew you were going to pick that because when we started the podcast, you already had a can cracked.
yeah, I probably gave it away.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I really love the sour too, but me myself, I find I don't really tend to drink sours quite often. Mainly just because, yeah, it gives me heartburn. But I usually stick mainly to, yeah, more like IPAs and lagers are kind of something that I really enjoy these days.
Nice. Keep all right, simple. Warren. Oh, sorry. Keep going.
Oh, no, I'm good.
Okay. Sorry. I heard the pause. I was taking my chance. So, Warren, buddy.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with the. I'm gonna have to go with the Queen of Tart. That the whole prickly pear thing was super interesting, and I really enjoyed that. I liked it a lot. I'm not a big hazy fan, and I'm not a big sour.
We
fan.
All know.
Be honest yeah. with you, but no, I find that one a little more interesting. Just if I had to pick one and go back for another, it'd be the sour.
I had to laugh because you're not a fan of sours, but you have picked a lot of sours as your favorite lately.
Yeah, yeah. Which is funny because my latest batch of homebrew has some lacto in it. It's not lactobacillus, lacto bavaris or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. You're changing.
And it's beautiful. It smells so nice.
Yes, this is what happens to Warren when I bring him on only sour podcasts.
Yeah.
Slowly
getting
you.
It's got yeast in it too. It's got some saison yeast in it too. Just a little bit of lacto to help.
Of course, it's got saison yeast in it. Weird.
That's all you brew these days.
All right, Mike, man, what would you choose out of the two, buddy?
Both are great beers, but I'm gonna have to go with the Morning Glory. I love a hazy beer, and guava is a great flavor in beer. Like pog beers and stuff are always so good.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, it's gonna have to be Morning Glory. It's just so easy drinking. There's no alcohol burn. It's super easy to drink. It's great.
All right, that's me now. Well, like I said, I've had the Morning Glory before, and I really do like it. I'm a huge fan of guava and hazies, as you guys all know. But I've been a sour kick like hardcore since the sun's been out, and just the flavor coming off this prickly pear, it's probably as a kettle sour one of the best kettle sours I've had in the past year. Like being straight up forward. Like there's so much flavor, even as it warms up, you still get the flavor and it's not acidic-y. Like I could go back and have two or three of these where like some kettle sours, you only get one. But yeah, I'm going with the Queen of Tart, the prickly pear, man. It was fantastic.
Sweet.
So Matt, keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Yeah,
I will. Thank you.
So what's the address of the brewery there?
Yeah, we're Unit 118, 1475 Fairview Road, Penticton, BC.
Not too hard to find, right downtown.
You got it. We got tons of bike parking, tons of car parking, free parking. So come on by.
And what about social media?
Yeah, follow us on Instagram. We're at The Tin Whistle. And Facebook, we're at The Tin Brew.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's been awesome.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah. Fantastic. It was very informative for me because when I heard Tin Whistle, I was like, oh yeah, those guys on Highway 97 that have been around forever. So this was super refreshing to hear that something interesting is happening over there. And wow, like the artwork, the beer, everything has changed a whole lot from what Tin Whistle means to me.
Absolutely.
I also like to thank Alexis just for helping me set this up and getting it all going, sending the beers down. It's much appreciated, and we love doing this. So if you guys ever have new beers or want to do this again, you have my email.
and who knows, I think in the future we'll be planning a trip up your way and looking to schedule some people to do some in-person
setup. Yeah, that's more what I meant.
We're ready for you. Come anytime.
Perfect.
Awesome. Right on. Thanks for joining us. It's been great.
Thanks, guys.
Thank Cheers.
Cheers.
Ciao.
If you want to find us on social media, you can go to at Pacific Beer Chat. You can go to pacificbeerchat.com. If you want to get together, if you want to contact us to set up a podcast, you can send an email to jordan@pacificbeerchat.com. And Jordan's giving me the middle finger right now. So send him an email and tell him not to do that anymore. And if you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/pacificbeerchat. Money goes towards hosting, upgrading equipment, and making the show better, hopefully. So shout out to our Patreon supporters, Indie Beer Show, and Steve. Peace.
Peace.
Later.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.